Eric Metaxas here. Please join me in a life-saving mission to set Sudanese slaves free through Christian Solidarity International. Since 1995, CSI has freed more than 100,000 women and children from years of bondage and abuse. Your $250 gift frees, feeds, and heals these captives and sets them on a path to a new life in freedom. Please help us free another slave now. Call 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522, or click the CSI banner at MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. This is the Eric Metaxas Show, and I haven't even plugged in my earpiece. Albin, do you believe this? I can't even hear myself.
We have
John Zmirak coming up in the program. So, ladies and gentlemen, buckle your seatbelts. Zmirak coming up. But I am already just fatigued from... I did two segments on the Steve Bannon War Room. Some of you know about the War Room, and... tons of people watch him. So I did that this morning. We're going to get the video from that, and we'll put it up. Where will we put it up?
Will we put it up on your website? Or are we going to put it up on Rumble? We're going to find a place.
Okay, there. There's a place. Here's a hot tip for you, folks. I probably have never mentioned this before, but since we're on the subject, go to ericmetaxas.com, sign up for the newsletter. When you sign up for the newsletter, you'll get all this information. My appearance on the War Room, people are calling it epic. Other people are calling it epical. Both technically are correct. But we will send it to you if you go to ericmetaxas.com and sign up for the newsletter. If you have trouble signing up for the newsletter, that's the deep state trying to block you. All you need to do then is contact us on the website and we will sign you up.
Yes.
I've had so much going on recently. I just was in Birmingham, Alabama. I want to talk about that. I was with Larry Taunton down there. I will be going... tomorrow, flying to Kansas City. I'm doing a private event St. Louis, Mo. St. Louis,
yeah,
Missouri.
I get those mixed up. Too,
and then this weekend, I'm going to be in Plymouth, Massachusetts. Nobody goes to Plymouth, Massachusetts. I'm going to go. Oh. Suzanne and I are going to hitch up the wagon,
yeah,
and we're going to go to Plymouth, Massachusetts.
Bring me back a pilgrim.
And we're going to, I'm speaking at an event on Saturday night in Plymouth, Massachusetts, and I'm speaking at a church the following morning in Plymouth, Massachusetts. And all of this stuff, if you're interested in it, we will send you video of all these things if you go to ericmetaxas.com, sign up for the newsletter. Now, ladies and gentlemen,
yes,
I got to tell you, I was recently in Birmingham, Alabama, and I just had the most wonderful time. Some of you know Larry Taunton. He's a friend. We've had him on this program a bunch of times. He runs the Fixed Point Foundation in Birmingham. He put on a conference, and I was one of the speakers. Actually, I was two of the speakers. But friends were there. Sam Sorbo.
Yeah.
Whenever she comes on this program, I tease her. We joke around. She is an amazing woman. She is almost single-handedly trying to take down the Marxist educational establishment. When you hear her talk about homeschooling and about what we're getting in schools and stuff, it's revolutionary and it's beautiful. And I just I want to recommend her to you. Look her up, because she has given acres and acres of talks on this stuff. And it is so important that parents understand what's at stake and what's going on, what they can do. But Sam Sorbo was there. I mentioned Larry Taunton. C.L. Bryant. Mm. He is a new friend. C.L. Bryant. Amazing. Tom Askall. But we're also going to get those videotapes up, and we'll send them to you if you go to ericmetaxas.com. I gave two speeches, which I'm looking forward to getting them out to you so you can hear them. Albin, a couple things that I don't want to forget. This week on this program, tomorrow actually, we have Jim Ryan on. Mm. You say, oh, who's Jim Ryan?
Oh, boy.
No joke. Probably, literally, the greatest high school athlete who has ever lived in any sport. When he was a kid, he's now in his 70s, mid-70s. In the 1960s, when he was in high school, he broke the 4 minute mile in high school.
Wow.
No one had ever done that before. He went to the Olympics and so on. So he's going to be coming on this program tomorrow to talk about the Olympics.
Right. From 1964, I think he was involved there. And then the new one in Tokyo, he's going to talk about what's going on and what the difference is if we don't know.
Wait, didn't he run in Tokyo in 64?
Yeah. That's what he said. That's the breakdown.
That's right. That's right.
So he has...
He ran the Olympics in Tokyo back then.
First-hand knowledge.
When I was just about... Okay, so he's... But honestly, he's a profound Christian. He was a member of Congress. He got the congressional... I'm sorry, he got the Presidential Medal of Freedom under Trump. I mean, this guy is a hero. He's a lot of fun. He and his wife are a riot. I have the privilege of hanging out with them. But he's just one of these wonderful people. We had his son Ned Ryan on recently.
Yes.
But tomorrow, buckle your seatbelts for that. And we're also going to continue our conversation. We're going to have another conversation with Naomi Wolf.
Oh, yeah.
She's the one that got us kicked off YouTube because she's such a fire breather.
I know. And at the end of the last one, she was talking about you guys were discussing real evil and real good. And there was a kind of a meeting of minds there.
It was very interesting because Naomi is not a believer in the Christian God. I like to say it that way. No, she's Jewish, and I actually don't know where she's coming from, but I think it's fascinating that somebody like that, who is, you know, she's been very liberal politically, she's an ardent feminist, but that she is seeing kind of the spiritual battle, and I thought that's interesting to me. So we'll talk to her about that tomorrow.
She's incredibly lovely too. You guys have a great conversation.
Yeah, no, I got to tell you, it's such a joy for me to think that somebody who was in my class at Yale, who I've thought of as on the other side of whatever ideological divide, you realize, if you are trying to find truth, you can find it and you can be a hero. She's just been a tremendously heroic voice. Yeah. So we'll talk to her. I got to mention also, people keep asking about Socrates in the City. We are going to be starting that up again in the spring. We're going to do a bunch of those events. So you can go to SocratesInTheCity.com. And you can, you can sign up for that email newsletter. But I also want to say that Socrates in the City, we're going to do a number of events in the spring. So I want to talk about that. I also want to say that September 11th of this year, this is coming up, folks, in about, 6 weeks? September 11th is going to be the 20th anniversary.
Hard to believe.
That make sense?
Yeah, I know. Hard to believe, really.
The 20th anniversary, very hard for me to believe, I got to tell you. But I'm going to be doing an event with Sean Foyt. Some of you know Sean Foyt, F-E-U-C-H-T. He's with Let Us Worship. They've been doing events all around the country. Talk about a hero. He's amazing. But there's going to be a big event, a very big event. I just want to warn you, you might want to pencil this in to be in the nation's capital on the Mall in D.C., on the Mall. They got the Mall in D.C. reserved for the evening of 9/11, 20th anniversary. There are going to be a lot of major figures there. This is not just going to be a Christian event. This is going to be a kind of a big deal national memorial, 20th anniversary. I believe I'm going to be the MC, but there are going to be some big names. I can't announce them yet, but there are going to be some big names. You didn't hear me say Elton John, but they're going to be there. And I just want you to put that on your radar because I think it's going to be a big deal. Last year, Sean Foyt did an event, just a normal, generic Let Us Worship event in October. They got 40,000 people on the Mall in D.C. That was last year in October. This year, on the 20th anniversary of 9/11 and the following day, the 12th of September, he's doing events. And I'm just expecting it to be huge. I want to mention, Albin, we're going to do a bit today. You're going to do a bit that we can't get into yet. But, folks, you remember the pirate pandemic thing?
Oh.
That's just the beginning. Oh. So stay tuned. After John Zmirak, we will get to that.
And, by the way, can I just mention, Ann and I went again to Jonathan Kahn's church.
What?
Beth Israel in Wayne, New Jersey. I went up to him again. He was so happy to see me again. He says, I got to see Eric here. When's Eric coming by?
Not going
to
happen.
Oh, come on. But he was glad to see me a couple weeks in a row. We love the church. We're going to go back next Sunday, and we're seeing how that's going to go. But Jonathan Kahn, unbelievable. We love him.
I love that. I travel so much that a lot of times on Sundays I'm out in another, this, as I said, this Sunday I'm going to be in Plymouth, Massachusetts. But, folks, I also want to mention, we don't have time right now, but we need to do a segment of sort of what we're doing in our spare time, right? Like, yes. Last night, I'm thinking, hey, what is there to watch? There's a film I mentioned the other day, My Octopus Teacher.
Yeah.
There's a film I watched last night called Knives Out, which came out like 2 years ago or something like that. And it's just so rare that you see a film and you just go, that was entertaining. That was really good. Knives Out. Okay, we're out of time. We'll be back with Zemirak.
Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people. In fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out.
Hey there, gang. Guess what? I get to talk to John Zemirak. John Zemirak, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Eric. Great to talk to you.
If people are watching this on video via Rumble, they can see that behind you is one of my favorite paintings ever. It is the Bruegel painting of the Tower of Babel or Babel. It is so beautiful, and unfortunately, it's more than just a painting. It's a metaphor, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. The Tower of Babel is one of the earliest episodes in the Old Testament. And it's very interesting to those of us who we get called things like, oh, you're a Christian nationalist. And of course, you should take time to unpack that. What is a Christian nationalist? What does it even mean? Well, if you actually look at what it's supposed to represent, you realize, oh, it's the worldview of pretty much every U.S. president before George H.W. Bush, and also that of Donald Trump. It is, you believe that Christian mores should infuse the government, that natural law should be the basis of positive law, that is, what you could know is good and evil based on reason that reaffirms what's taught in divine revelation, but you're drawing it out of reason. You know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, rational arguments based on human nature, that should be the basis of morality, not tribal solidarity, like Black Lives Matter, only Black, or White Lives Matter, or any other kind of tribalism, and not class solidarity, like Marxism or socialism, and not theocracy, where you say, divine revelation, what it says in my sacred book must be imposed by law. No, natural law, which you can know by reflecting on what mankind is and who we are and what we are as people. That should be the basis of law. But you don't want a global dictatorship, a global oligarchy like the United Nations.
Are you bringing this back to the Tower of Babel? I can see you get it. I know. I can see you getting there. But for a second, I was like, wait a minute. Where is he going? But I know. So keep it going. Keep it going.
Okay. You don't want a globalist remote oligarchy like the UN or the EU or Napoleon's empire or the Soviet Union or the New World Order. You don't want distant, remote, elite bureaucrats imposing their will on ordinary people. You want people to be able to elect governments in their own countries. You want to have an independent Hungary, an independent Poland, an independent United States. That's the nationalism part. So Christian nationalism sounds so scary. Well, what's the alternative? Marxist globalism?
Well, you know, it's funny because you're talking about what we have to call it. We say, oh, Christian nationalism. We all know that there was a time in America where everyone in America understood this. That's what it was to be an American. They don't need to give it more of a label than that. To be an American is to understand these things in a kind of fundamental way. But because of the challenges we've been facing in the culture, we have to reassert these things, redefine these things, and explain to people what is the difference between being an American and buying into some globalist, anti-nationalist agenda. Isn't it because people are very simple and they say, you know what, Hitler bad. Hitler believed in a strong Germany. Therefore, any strong nationalism is evil. They forget that, no, there's bad kinds of nationalism where it's not even really nationalism. It's kind of a satanic project to take over the world.
Imperialism. It's imperialism. There's a great book, The Virtue of Nationalism, by an Israeli scholar, Yoram Hazoni. And he says there are three, not two, alternatives. The alternatives are tribalism, where people who look like you and talk like you, you band together and you dominate people who don't. Nationalism, where everyone who resides in a given territory should have basic civic rights and participate in the country. And then imperialism. And he calls every form of globalism imperialism because it wants to impose a single imperial vision on people of all different cultural backgrounds and national heritages and language groups. So I'm perfectly comfortable calling myself a Christian nationalist because I'm not a globalist Marxist. I'm not a tribalist racialist. I'm not an atheist libertarian. No, I'm a Christian who believes in natural law, and I'm a nationalist, not an imperialist, not a white separatist or tribalist.
Well, you have to clarify for people, because when you say something like Christian nationalism, we know that most people, certainly people on the left, they have a caricature of what you're saying. They don't understand that up until 10 minutes ago, everybody in America believed in these basic ideas. We're not talking about theocracy. We're not talking about anything like that. We're talking about freedom on the American model. Do you have articles at the stream if people want to, yes, they want to bone up, yeah, on these topics? They're not just listening to this program. Where can they go?
Sure.
Stream.org to what?
Right. And I've got two articles I'll tell you about. But I just want to make it clear. The term Christian nationalism was invented by the left to try to smear the kind of ordinary traditional conservatism that you express in your books, like If You Can Keep It, that I express in my books. It's a smear that they invented because they thought people would hear Christian nationalist and think white nationalist, and that they would associate these two completely unrelated things. It is just a propaganda trick. So anyone who you hear using the term Christian nationalist, assume he is a lying propagandist who wants to destroy you and doesn't care about the truth.
Well,
lose that person.
That's the point,
number.
Is that it's just name calling. But when you break it down, I mean, look.
We should claim it back.
The central idea in my book, If You Can Keep It, which I got from Oz Guinness, is this golden triangle of freedom. And people need to understand this: that freedom requires virtue and people of faith, but freedom can never impose virtue or faith. So faith to flourish requires freedom. Freedom to flourish requires faith. But when you're talking about freedom, it can never be imposed. So this idea that people say Christian nationalism as though it's theocracy, and we have to be clear, no, you can never impose or force any kind of serious faith. That kind of theocracy or autocratic impulse is against the Bible, even though people have misused it, of course, and it is against the founder's vision of freedom. So we just have to be clear, folks, that the last thing we're talking about is that, in case you're just tuning in.
I've been the leading opponent of so-called integralism in Catholic circles. And the integralists really are theocrats. They want a kind of Catholic Sharia. They want the Pope and church councils to be the basis of the law, and they want the police to enforce the will of the Pope. Now, that's a lot worse now than it would have been under John Paul II, but it's still bad in principle. But right now, it would mean effectively enforcing George Soros's agenda, because the current Pope is a big fan of Chinese communism and radical multiculturalism, and it seems, even based on his recent actions, same-sex marriage. But no, we don't want religious truth stuffed down people's throat. We want natural law, the basic understanding of what human beings are. Two sexes grow up in families, the nuclear family or the extended family. The endurance of marriage, you know, lifelong marriage.
Did Burke, Edmund Burke, the father of conservatism, call them the little platoons, basically, didn't he?
He called small institutions like churches and clubs and families, okay, all the little units of order that don't require the state with its jackboots and bayonets to enforce things on people. The voluntary, spontaneous order that bubbles up, again, from within human nature, the way God made it. What we're seeing now is the country ripping itself apart, largely because it abandoned that vision of order. Let's be clear. The official version of America, the one that's on the law books, thanks to Supreme Court decisions like Anthony Kennedy's Planned Parenthood versus Casey, that official America is evil. It says abortion is okay through all 9 months of pregnancy. It says you can marry someone of the same sex. It says that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 covered transgender rights.
Thanks so to Gorsuch. Thanks to Trump's appointee Gorsuch. How insane. How can that be? Anyway.
The fact that we haven't paid enough attention and we don't have good institutions. We let a couple of cronies from the Federalist Society write a list of nominees on a bar napkin, and they hand it to Trump, and he goes, okay, because he doesn't know.
Well, it could have been a lot worse, let's be honest. I mean, I think
that... It could not have been that much worse. I mean, his own appointees didn't even support him over the stolen election. Donald Trump could have just picked names out of a hat, and he would have done just as well as Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch. I'm sorry. No, that was an absolute.
When we come back, I'm going to question John Zmirak on what he has just said. Very important conversation, folks. Don't go away.
Distant cousin from down the line, brand of people who ain't my kind. Oh, Lambo says I've been removed.
Well, I looked over Jordan and what did I see? Coming for to carry me home. There was a band of angels.
Hey there, folks. I'm talking to John Zmirak. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. John, you were making a point, and as usual, I interrupted you. But so make the point, but then I want to go back to the Trump appointees to the Supreme Court. Go ahead.
Okay. The official on the law books version of what America means, in other words, based on Supreme Court decisions that haven't been overturned, that official America is evil. It says partial birth abortion is fine. Same-sex marriage is fine. Bruce Jenner can go expose himself to girls in a high school locker room because he claims he's a woman. All these things, these positions of the most radical sexual libertines, they've pretended are imposed by the Constitution. Roe v. Wade was a lie. Not a mistake, a lie. KCVP Planned Parenthood, a lie. Obergefell, they're based on lies about the Constitution. If you read Did America Have a Christian Founding by Mark David Hall, the constitutional scholar, proves that since the 1940s, liberal secular court appointees have been perverting the Constitution to pretend that we live in a radically secular republic and that our Constitution was designed to keep Christianity down, to keep it at bay because it's a dangerous force. These are not just mistakes, they're lies. We need to overturn these lies, and we need to do it by putting better people on the court, much, much better people than Donald Trump scraped out of the barrel and dumped on the plate.
Now, let's go there, because this is really a radical thing to say in this day and age. I'm not saying I disagree with it. Unfortunately, I know if you say something, probably I'll end up agreeing with it very soon, because you don't just make statements. But it's a horrifying thing to imagine that what you just said is true. In other words, I think that on many important things, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch and Amy Coney Barrett would rule rightly. But recently, let's just talk about their unwillingness to see, to look at the evidence in terms of what happened in the election. Texas put forward this lawsuit, and they said on behalf of all the other states, we need to have clarity. This is a mess. Our votes in Texas are not counting if you've got all these other things going on in these other states. So we're taking this to the Supreme Court. Perfectly legitimate, perfectly right. The Supreme Court didn't look at the evidence and say we don't agree. They refused to look at the evidence. Right. And if Amy Coney Barrett and Gorsuch and Kavanaugh had said we want to see this evidence, which we would have assumed that they would, the evidence would have been looked at and we would be having a different conversation. What do you think it was? Because I talk about this all the time. This election is horrifying to me, and this has to be uncovered. And I believe it will be uncovered. Stay tuned, folks. But, John, how is it possible in your mind that these three justices could have sided with Roberts and said, we will not look at this? It seems to me political.
Cowardice, social prestige. They didn't want to be marked out. They didn't want to get the same treatment Clarence Thomas did. Brett Kavanaugh wanted the treatment he'd gotten to stop. He wanted to redeem himself and not be considered radioactive and hated all throughout his life. He wanted to be treated the way Justice Roberts is treated. He gets invited to the National Press Club. His wife doesn't get the stink eye at the country club. We saw what happened to Clarence Thomas, and in fact, it provoked in him a religious awakening. He returned to his childhood Catholic faith. He became a daily churchgoer. Being lied about, being lynched on television, had a profound effect on Clarence Thomas. By all accounts, Brett Kavanaugh was always the go-along to get-along kind of person. I was at college at Yale at the same time as this guy. I was a conservative. He was a conservative. I never heard of his existence because he kept his head down because he wanted to make it in America. He wanted to go be like the WASPs. Never heard him speak up about anything. Then he goes and works for the Bush administration. He clerks under Anthony Kennedy, the architect of the nihilist vision of America as we're all talking about the mystery of existence, and after the second bomb, we realize it's we can't agree on anything, man. So I had hoped that being crucified as he was, Brett Kavanaugh would wake up and say, I don't care what people think of me. I don't care about the country club. Burn it down for all I care. I'm going to follow the Constitution. No, that's not what happened. What happened was he said uncle.
John, this is a big deal. I mean, Stockholm syndrome, the idea that these people, you just said it. I mean, after he'd been through that hell, that he would not. I'm always curious, and I'm sure my audience is as well. What do we think happened? Do we think that Roberts made the case to the three of them? Listen, we are one branch of government. This is an election. The specter of Gore v. Bush and what happened 20 years ago is here. We need to stay out of this no matter what. And somehow he persuaded them that this was a separation of powers thing.
No. Those kind of arguments don't persuade people. He went to them and said, your lives will be hell. There will be rioters on your front lawn.
And?
Your kids won't feel safe going to school. Your life will be an unmitigated nightmare. Or you can just, you can just burn a pinch of incense in front of Caesar and walk along and have a nice day. And those are the kind of people, unfortunately, that Trump picked. He didn't pick the best. I was warning about to Amy Coney Barrett before Trump even picked her.
Well, I remember that, John, but it's hard for me to agree on this because it's so pessimistic. I mean, the idea that these three people that he had to fight for were not what we had hoped. We're going to a break, folks. More with John Zmirak. And we're back talking to John Zmirak. John, we've got to finish this off, and then I want to talk about the articles you've written at stream.org, which it's required for people to print out and leave around their neighborhood. Stream.org, John Zmirak. John, let's go back. You have a jaundiced view of Leonard Leo and the Federalist Society. It's hard for me to accept this because for so long I was genuinely persuaded, and I'm not yet unpersuaded, that this was very important. This was the key to Trump's first election, and that he did tremendous things in the judiciary, not just at the Supreme Court level. Surely you have to think there is something positive along these lines.
I don't know, maybe some lower court people. But yes, I'm utterly jaded about Leonard Leo, and I'll tell you why. He's the guy who gave us John Roberts. And when pro-life activists asked tough questions whether they could really trust John Roberts, according to a friend, Leonard Leo said, listen, he goes to weekly Days of Recollection with Opus Dei.
Right.
He's sound. No, I'm sorry. That's not an argument. That is not an argument. Going to Opus Dei is this elite rich Catholic group that's big in D.C., that's a networking opportunity. That's like saying this person goes to Young Life social mixers on campus. He's obviously saved and he will go to heaven because he goes to Young Life events. Well, no, they could be meat markets for him. There was no vetting. There was no analysis. People like Robert Bork and Antonin Scalia and Clarence Thomas and Alito, these were scholars who were outspoken, who took risks, who flouted the popular opinion and made themselves unpopular and drew attacks from the left. Those are the only people worth having on the court. The kind of people where you might get one or two Democrat votes, you don't need them on the court. It would be better to appoint no one. If you can't get another Clarence Thomas on the court, put him up, and if he gets turned down, leave an empty spot until you've taken over the Senate. Let there be four people on the Supreme Court. This is the whole ball of wax. This is, we can impose same-sex marriage by decree on the entire country. We can impose abortion on demand. We can impose transgender rights. This is a dictatorship of five lawyers, as Antonin Scalia said. We can't play softball. The enemy is playing rollerball, and we're playing t-ball, and we're surprised when they win. We barely have a legitimate democratic system of government because five people can overturn the will of the voters in 50 states. And if you want to reverse it, you have to go through this elaborate constitutional amendment thing, or you try to get people on the court and the same elites demonize anyone you try to get on who's any good to make sure you don't get another Clarence Thomas. All you get is chewed up old chewing gum like Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett.
I wish I hadn't been listening for the last 2 minutes, but I was listening, and it's depressing, John. It's depressing. Do you think Trump has finally woken up to the idea that he kind of squandered opportunities, that he was, like me and like many, persuaded that he might be able to get some things done, not aware that he was, in fact, in an all-out war?
Yeah, I would cut Trump some real slack for not realizing that the left was not going to permit the legitimate transition of power in 2016, and they never did. The left rejected the results of the 2016 election and used every method, fair and foul, terrorist methods, creating a fake dossier that links an American citizen like Donald Trump, that links him to a foreign power and suggests that he's committing treason, making up elaborate dossiers, putting him in hotel rooms, doing disgusting acts with prostitutes, taking bribes from foreign governments, making all of that up. And then the FBI, knowing it is a pack of lies and using its power, destroying people's lives, going after Mike Flynn, George Papadopoulos, Carter Page, destroying people's lives in service of what they knew was a lie. This is how the East German Stasi operated. So I don't know. Donald Trump did not realize that the deep state were an anti-American, evil, terrorist force that must be rooted out of America, and hundreds of these people deserve to spend the rest of their lives in federal prison. That's how bad the FBI is. The FBI should be abolished, And every executive member should be investigated within an inch of their lives to find out how, for instance, so many of them could go public and say the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation. They said all that just before the election. They said that the case against Donald Trump was solid. They lied to us. They used our own government against us. Just as surely as Yuri Andropov used his government against the Russian people in the 1980s. We are dealing with a domestic dictatorship that is using Facebook and Twitter to get around the First Amendment and censor free speech. You can't even ask questions about the legitimacy of the last election or whether it's a good idea to take a vaccine. No, you're going to be silenced, and the federal government is going to coordinate with these allegedly private companies in order to silence your free speech. Are you alarmed yet? Are you angry yet? Or are you going to let them play you? Are you going to let them lure you along with breadcrumbs until they put you in the dog crate and send you off to be euthanized?
The idea that I was knocked off of YouTube makes me wonder, now that we know via Jen Psaki that the Biden administration is somehow involved in this, it is fascinating to me to think that they would just identify the troublemakers and say, let's get them. Let's figure out how to get them. And so they played patty cake with me as I played patty cake with them. And it took some time, and they give you a strike and then another strike and whatever. And then when they go in for the kill, they go back 2 months to find this interview that I did with Naomi Wolf. They go, well, that's strike three. And I thought to myself, I mean, as time has passed, I thought to myself, it really is. There's no other word. It's creepy. It's really creepy that in the United States of America, we would even think that the government, our government, we are supposed to be the government, that our government would be doing these kinds of things. And again, that's just affecting me personally. But you were talking about all this other stuff. We're going to go to another break, but we'll keep you for the next 20 minutes or whatever we have here into the next hour. But I just want to say, folks, it's time to wake up. Unfortunately, we are in a war with really, really evil folks. People are doing things that I never thought we would see in America. We need to get to the bottom of it. That's all. We'll be right back.
Shy little Uber, liver, liver, lead us less too far. We wonder, love, sweet voices calling yonder. Shy little Uber, liver, liver, hey there, don't get dimmer, dimmer, light the path.
I'd rather have Jesus than sin.
I'm talking to John Zmirak, who writes for The Stream. Folks, go to stream.org, find John's articles. John, let's talk about these articles.
Thanks, Eric. I've got a two-part series at stream.org called White Fear Part 1 and White Fear Part 2.
White Fear, okay.
White Fear. I saw an article at Eon Magazine, which is an online philosophical magazine that's supposed to be kind of centrist and apolitical. But this article was quite provocative. It said that people like Tucker Carlson are tools of the far, far extremist right, that they are actually feeding into a dangerous narrative because they're saying that white Americans are increasingly getting uncomfortable and frightened about becoming a minority in what was their own country. Let's remember that until 1960, America was 90% white. 90%. That's a pretty overwhelming, you know, that's like Japan is 97% Asian. You know, that was virtually an ethno state on the European model. And then mass immigration, they decided, you know, we don't need that anymore. Well, there were some good things about the changes that happened at America after World War II. Samuel Huntington, in his great book, Who Are We? He said that in reaction against the Nazis, in reaction against the communists, we said we have to be truer to America's founding ideals. Yes, the reality is it's an Anglo-Protestant country that formed its culture and that forms its institutions. But it doesn't have to be racially European. We don't need that.
It has nothing to do with skin color. Let's be clear. This has nothing to do with skin color. This is about ideology. This is about
and culture.
And culture. Right. So what in the world does it have to do with color or ethnic diversity? Absolutely nothing.
Well, Eric, the thing is that most nations have cohesion based on tribal kinship, based on we're all Hungarians. There might be a few non-Hungarians, but we're Hungarians. We're Swiss. We're Welsh. Tribal kinship is the de facto normal way for nations to be built historically, and it's not intrinsically evil. You know, it's not evil for the children of Israel to be together. So let's not demonize the norm for 99% of nations throughout the world as evil and say only American exceptionalism is good and everything else is wicked.
John, that's a very important point. I'm glad you said that. Because I got this a little bit from reading C.S. Lewis when he talks about God's idea of England. Bonhoeffer talks about God's idea of Germany. There is something beautiful about these nations and these cultures. And the idea is that God wants that beautiful version to come to the fore. So we have in history seen the evil version in Germany under Hitler. But everyone who loved Germany truly knew that Hitler was actually the enemy of that Germany. And so right. We do need to be clear about that. So we've just got less than a minute left, but then we're going to keep you on to the second hour. Keep going.
Okay. America after World War II became truer to its founding vision of everybody of any ethnic background can be part of America if you sign on to its values, which are not just of the Constitution. They're of Anglo-Protestant culture, which is a much richer, deeper thing than just whatever the Supreme Court spews out of its mouth.
Well, that's important. Now, you write about this in both articles at The Stream. We've just got 20 seconds left. Give us a final thought, and then we'll keep you into the second hour.
Okay. Are white people becoming paranoid and defensive? And I will say increasingly the left is goading them towards that, but they need to resist the temptation. It's very dangerous. And I'll tell you why next time.
Okay. Hang on, folks. We'll be back.